for thanking them for the order of the presentations. I will be using the definition of the Alpinov exponent that Franco just talked about. So let me begin. Okay. So this has to do a little bit with the foundations of statistical physics, so let me go fast about that. Maybe most of you know about it, but then I'll go. So here are two quotes, one from Joe Leibowitz and one from George Savlasky. One says that chaos should not be important for foundations of statistical physics. The other says that chaos makes it necessary to reconsider our views in each of these aspects. So the idea is, what does chaos have to do with statistical physics? So let me remind you, in statistical mechanics you want to study a system with a large degree, number of degrees of freedom, n is 10 to the 23, so you usually have a Hamiltonian, which is constant, and you can get Hamilton's equations of motion, and you have to solve them. And the idea is that anything you can measure, like for example temperature, is you have to follow the trajectory in phase space and do this type of average. Well, you also know that this you cannot do, so you resort to the ergodic hypothesis and you do this change this time integral for a space integral, space on this phase space, which is called the gamma space. And this distribution function is a microcanonical distribution function. This is the microcanonical partition function, which is just the normalizing factor of this distribution, and it's just, well, the area of this surface of energy. So if you're able to calculate this, which is not easy, except for an ideal gas, then you've done, because you have your entropy, and from that you have your temperature, pressure, and chemical potential. So the idea is, what if there is sensitivity to initial conditions, what does that have to do with the entropy? Okay? So that's what you want to know too. Well, I don't know. No? It's an open question. This I won't talk about, neither this. But I can tell you what would happen in the lattice gas accelerator automaton. What does chaos have to do with this type of Lyapunov exponent? So the nice thing about lattice gas accelerator automata is that they have well-defined hydrodynamics, they have a well-defined thermodynamics, and using the definition that Franco talked about, we can measure Lyapunov exponents, so we can put into evidence what this has to do with this behavior. And the results, which are here, is that we can, I will talk about this D2Q9, which is on two-dimensional lattice, square lattice, and particles can move with 9 velocities, and we can write the rule for the evolution in a deterministic and a reversible way. Then I will show you that there is some relationship between the largest Lyapunov exponent and the entropy density, and that there is also some relationship between this largest Lyapunov exponent and Boltzmann's H function. That is the idea of the talk. So I guess you're all familiar with these types of gases. So it is this is like a picture of the gas at some time t. So at any site you can have particles are these shown by these green arrows. So this means that there's a particle here which has a velocity going north, and here there are four particles, etc., etc. So think that this is a big, large lattice. Here there's a particle at rest, and there's an exclusion principle in this gas. Particles, you cannot have two particles going north, for example, here. At most is one. And here's a particle, some particles at rest have velocity zero, particles moving on the axis have velocity one, and particles moving on the axis, on the diagonals have velocity square root of two. So the update rule goes with streaming followed by collision, or it could be the other way around. Here I did it streaming and collision. That is, well, in parallel, every particle moves to where it's pointing to the next site, and then it collides. So to see what's happening in the central site, the only thing that's important are these three red particles. The others will fly away. so they fly away. And now these stream into this central site. And now we have a state with three particles. The momentum in the x direction is zero, momentum in the y direction is zero, and the energy is one half for this, and one for this one, because mass is one. Okay? So the output state should have conserved mass, momentum, and energy. So here is one output state that does that. Okay? So that's the way it goes. And this is done in parallel in the whole lattice. So for example, this was the input state for the collision, this was the output state for the collision, but I could have chosen any one of these. And the usual implementations of the rule do this by choosing one of these at random. So it's a probabilistic set of automata. And what I'll show you in the next slide, I guess, is how this can be turned into a deterministic set of automata. At least one way of doing that. Let me introduce some notation. This is a state at site r time t is just 9 bits. So you have to know what the value of this is. These 9 bits, you can write them as a base 10 number. So you have a set of automata which has 2 to the 9 states. And here, you write it down like that. What's happening at site r at time t plus 1 is a streaming followed by a collision, which the streaming operator operates on the neighborhood of site r. And so here is how you make it a deterministic Taylor automaton. So for example, if you take, what you do is you make up a lookup table, and this lookup table will have 2 to the 9 rows. And for each row, well, this is number 56. These are all the possible outcomes, okay? And so you choose one of these at random. But then you will have, let's say for 55, you will have maybe only 2 outcomes. And the thing is to do is look for the least common denominator of all possible outputs and repeat this until you have an output table which is rectangular. Okay? So it turns out that you need 60 columns and 512 rows. And once you do that, then to every site on the lattice, you assign a random number between 0 and 59, and that will tell you which column to take the output from. Okay? So in that case, you have a Krebs disorder where you put into the lattice, and then every time you want to update that lattice, a certain you go and see, for example, has a number 3, you go and take the output from column 3. So that will make it a deterministic automaton. The next thing you can do, this is not really important for what I'm talking about, but it's kind of nice. So you can also accommodate these outputs here in such a way that if you have some state after a collision goes into this state, then if you invert the state, then it will turn into that. If you collide it again, it comes back to that. And then if you invert it again, you do this, all in the same site. That means you have to accommodate these in some way, in such way that this happens. And this guarantees that the automaton is reversible. And that is interesting because then you can study the reversibility paradox, which I have one slide. And so now, here the evolution of the automaton is, the streaming is already written down here. And then you have a random number at site R, which will tell you how to choose this collision. Okay? Okay. So, if we want to use the Lyapunov exponent, we need to turn this 2 to the 9 state cellular automaton into a Boolean cellular automaton, and that is very easy. So you know you have the state at site r is 9 bits. So now you take the state of the whole lattice will be the states of each site on the lattice. Here L is the number of sites on the lattice lambda. And now you can rewrite S as like this, where now we have 9 L positions here, no? Just going on like that. So N is just the number on this crazy L. And so now each of the entries here is a 0 or 1. And then you can write your automaton like this. And this Fn will depend on K and on the, on
where you are,
on the, on R and on the random number.
Okay? But you can do that.
So once you do that, you can define your Jacobian matrix as before. So it's just the difference between the Fn value at Sp and the Fn value at 1 minus Sp. And once you have your Jacobian matrix, you can take your evolution on the tangent space, which is just a linearized version of the rule. And you start with, let's say, a vector v, which has only 1, 1, which is, but that's not terribly necessary because you just want to know how far, how it's expanding, the expansion rate. And then if it is chaotic, then you would expect that the norm of v of t is something like a norm of v of 0 e to a lambda t. And the norm, since you, since the components are 0 and 1, it's just the sum of the entries. No? And you can divide it by the number of entries if you want to, but that's not terribly necessary. So this turns out that lambda is 1 over t, logarithm of v of t over v of 0, then you start multiplying and dividing by the same thing over and over again. So you can write your Lyapunov exponent as a time average of this quantity u of t, which is just the local expansion factor. And so now you have all the elements you need to calculate Lyapunov exponents. And so let me tell you how it comes out, the results for Boltzmann's H function. So going back to lattice gas cellular automaton, here I've written the evolution of a cellular automaton slightly different. So first it collides, and then it, and then there's the streaming. But that doesn't really matter. It's just the same thing. So what you have is at site r at time t, this can change. So this is a collision operator, which depends on the state at that site. And then the collision operator can have one of these three outputs. So this can change, and then you push whatever you found there to the next site in the direction where CK is going to. CK are the nine velocities. So this is the equation for the cellular automaton. If, and you define distribution functions as ensemble averages. I mean, you repeat your experiment a large number of times and take this average. And now you take the average on of this here and kind of use some type of Boltzmann the molecular chaos hypothesis, you arrive at the Boltzmann's transfer rate equation, where this is a collision operator for the for these things, for the distribution function. The nice thing about it is that you can prove, as is proven in this paper, that there's an H theorem. And so you define H like that, which is just the discrete analog of the continuous definition, of Boltzmann's continuous definition. Boltzmann did not use a minus here, he just put a plus. So you can prove that dH over dt is greater or equal than zero, with a minus sign here. Okay? So we, what we tried to do is to do an experiment, a computer experiment, oh, before that. Well, you can also find in that paper that from Boltzmann's transfer rate equation, you can arrive at a fluid dynamics equation by usual Chapman-Enskog expansion. So you see that these lattice gas cellular automata have a nice thermal hydrodynamics. And then what we did is, here are the numerical results. Let me tell you what we did. We did an irreversible process. We had this two-dimensional box. We divided it in two. One part of the, one side has a large density and it's in thermal equilibrium. The other part has a smaller density, it's also in thermal equilibrium. At time zero, we remove the wall between the two. And we define, and we repeat this with the same random number, the same quench disorders on all the R samples, but with different initial conditions, all, always in equilibrium. So we define the distribution function like that. And the, obviously, the Boltzmann's H function like that. And it's the green that maybe you can't see it. It's very light. But if not, you will believe me, there's a green curve here. This is time. And on the other hand, we can find the local expansion factor. And this L of t is just the average of log of ui of t. I is just which sample we're working with. And this is a red curve, which is kind of oscillates. So they look more or less the same, this quantity here, compared with h of t. In this graph, what we eliminated is time, so we just put the graph of h against L, and there's a nice linear relationship. What we see here, the oscillations, is that once you remove the wall, there's a shock wave going from the part with a large density to the one with a small density, and this shock wave just travels around. We put in periodic boundary conditions until it dissipates. Here you don't have any more. And this quantity is much more, say, sensitive to this shock wave than Boltzmann's H function. So our first result is that they are indeed related, and there is a linear relationship between the Boltzmann H function and this quantity here, which is the local expansion factor of the Lyapunov exponent. And this is just a slide to show you that if it's reversible, it really works. So this is the same experiment that after 1,000 time steps, you reverse the velocities of all particles, and you can see that goes back to its initial state. And also the logarithm of U, this L, also goes back. But then if you keep on going back, let's say in time, then it starts to spread again. Okay? It goes to the limit. So it collapses back to its initial condition, then goes back. The Lyapunov exponent also shrinks back to its initial condition and then starts going again. Okay. Yes? Okay. So entropy is defined like this. So where P of S is the probability of finding the state S on the whole lattice. And being a Fermi gas, because there's this exclusion principle, this probability can be written like that, a product of R over K of this quantity here. So it turns out that S takes this form. And in equilibrium, there is no dependence on R. So the distribution functions you can take this quantity. So this is the entropy density, because it's already divided by the number of sites. And if you define N, the total number of particles, you need the total energy. Here epsilon K is zero for particles at rest. It is one half for particles moving on the axis, and one for particles moving on the diagonals. Then we can define the number density and the energy density. And they have this form because in equilibrium all the F's on the axis are equal, and all the F's on the diagonals are equal. So we have these two equations, and we also have a third condition that this quantity must be a maximum. So this, we have three conditions for three quantities, so we can solve this problem. And that, before going to that, let me tell you that there is some constriction on the possible available states. And being a Fermi gas, it has a Fermi energy. So for example, if N is 3, you can, the smallest energy is this. If you have 3 particles per site, then this is a state of lowest energy, one particle at rest, and the other two on the axis. There's some degeneracy on that, but that's it. So the energy is 1 half plus 1/2. This is the Fermi energy. But there is also maximum energy per site. So if you want to put 3 particles per site with the largest energy, you have this, which is 3. So it turns out that for every energy density you can think of, there is a Fermi energy and a maximum energy. So these are all the available thermodynamic states. You cannot go out of this green region. So if you do this maximization problem, you have these three conditions, you have to maximize, you find out that Fk is the usual Fermi Dirac distribution, where beta is the inverse temperature and mu is the chemical potential. And here is the case where n equals 3, so you have when you have, let's say, the smallest energy, you have particles here and here, you know? And when you have the highest energy, you don't have particles. You don't have particles in F5 on the diagonal direction. Okay, so how does the entropy look like? The entropy looks like that. No, here's the state space. This is a really available state space, and then you have this dome. And this dome tells you that, for example, you have n=3. The entropy is small, then it grows, then it goes back and it's small again. And this means the entropy is not an always increasing function of energy, which is postulates of thermodynamics is that the entropy cannot decrease with energy, but that's for normal systems. It is not a normal system because it has this upper bound on the energy, which also happens on lots of spin systems, so that is no problem. So the system is ordered for it's near the Fermi energy, and it's also ordered when it's near the maximum energy. So this is the next result. In red, you find the entropy density, let's say here for n=4, which is just a cut from the last graph. And in green is the Lyapunov exponent. Obviously, we cannot make an infinite time limit, so it just takes a long time until it's more or less stable. And you see that they look they're quite similar. Here, again, we eliminated E and we put the graph again, lambda against S. And they are more or less on a straight line. This is for other numbers for other number densities. n=4, which is this graph, is a red curve, and the others are dots. I think you can see that. So there's also some kind of linear relationship. Oh, that's nice. I'm almost finished. And so I have some final remarks. Those are the main two results. The first has to do with why is it that the entropy and the Lyapunov exponent have something in common? No? It turns out that numerically we found it for this lattice gas, but why is that? So we don't have a complete answer, but we have some type of answer. So you think that you have a Markov process, which is the simplest Markov process you can think of. So you do some coarse graining and you have, let's say, these states X, and all have the same probability. You have M different states. And then you have this transition matrix, which from every state X prime, you can go to a state, to a fraction alpha of states. So you have 1 over alpha M entries in a row or a column. And then the entropy would be this. And since all the P of X are equal, you just have log M. And this is the Kolmogorov-Sinai entropy. The Kolmogorov-Sinai entropy, once you put in P of X and W of X, turns out to be this quantity. So if M is large, you can take away log alpha. And then if it's a Hamiltonian system, the Kolmogorov entropy would be just the sum of the positive Lyapunov exponent. So the Kolmogorov entropy would be more roughly proportional to the largest Lyapunov exponent. And then you would have the equality that the entropy and the largest Lyapunov exponent are more or less the same. So this is kind of a simple argument to tell you why that's working, but although that is not a Hamiltonian system. So let me make a summary of what we've done. No? So you know lattice gas automata are nice models because they have a nice hydrodynamics and they can include thermal effects, and they have a nice thermodynamics in equilibrium. So we can do this and make this we can make the evolution deterministic and reversible. The idea is that if it's deterministic, then it's a deterministic cellular automaton, and then we can find the Jacobian matrix and find the Lyapunov exponent. And then the first result is that this log of U of T is proportional to the Boltzmann's H function, and in equilibrium, the entropy density is linearly related to lambda. And on the other hand, you found out from last talk that lambda is related to the number of ones in the Jacobian matrix because it's this percolation problem. So if you don't have enough ones in the percolation in the Jacobian matrix, eventually it will die off and you have the Lyapunov exponent, which is minus infinity. So it's, and on the other hand, F is related to the number of available states. So it turns out that when, that's what we found, that when you have lots of available states, where the entropy is large, then you also have lots of variability, which is measured by this Jacobian matrix. Well, I guess that's all. Thank you.